This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. We're staying inside San Francisco schools for this next segment. The latest edition of the San Francisco Public Press features a report called Choice is Resegregating Public Schools. In it, reporter Jeremy Adams Smith unveils the reality of diversity in the city's public schools, or more accurately, the lack thereof. San Francisco Unified's choice system allows parents to rank and choose any school in the city for their children. Then a lottery determines where they go. This system was designed to bring more racial diversity to the city's schools. But ironically, it's been doing the opposite. Jeremy Adams Smith joined me in studio to explain.
We're seeing more and more schools with larger and larger numbers of one racial group. So what we're seeing is that white students are concentrating at a few very good schools. And Asians, you know, there's a lot more diversity there in terms of the number of schools that Asian students attend. Blacks and Latinos way disproportionately were attending underperforming schools. The defining feature of the current San Francisco Unified Student Assignment System is choice, school choice. When a parent applies to a school, to kindergarten, they can list, if they wish, all 72 schools in order of preference, all 72 elementary schools, to be exact. And once they do that, then this computer algorithm takes their application, and there's a series of what are called tiebreakers. The tiebreakers give heavy preference to people who live in the attendance area of the school. And also siblings are important. So if they have an older sibling who already goes to the school, they'll get preference, right? Now, the district does something else that was considered very innovative, and it is. It's interesting. They look at the average standardized test scores of the student's neighborhood, which they use as a proxy for measuring poverty. And if you come from a section of the city with low average test scores, then you'll get preference to go to the school of your choice.
Okay.
Right.
But what if I'm the mother of, you know, I'm a low-income mom, I'm a single mom, I live in Bayview. I would love to take my son to that school that's really far away and, you know, high achieving. How am I going to get there? How am I going to take him every morning? This system doesn't... seems to me it doesn't put these things into consideration.
Well, you know, it goes back even further than that in some ways. Let's say you're like me and my wife. You know, we graduated from college. I have a very flexible work schedule as a writer and journalist. And I have computer skills and language skills. English is my native language, and I work all day on a computer. I'm really good at these things. So what's the first thing I do? I jump online. I start researching the schools. I go to great schools. I go to other websites that rank the schools, provide a lot of information about the test scores, about their ethnic composition, all of those things. I can find that out on my computer.
And you do it early.
And I do it early. I do it, you know, when we started looking at schools for my son, I started doing it about 18 months to 2 years before he actually was to go to kindergarten. And then the process begins. And for a lot of parents in San Francisco, and parents listening to this will know exactly what I'm talking about, that means school tours. You go on school tour after school tour. And you need to need a flexible work schedule. You know, if you are a shift worker, if you're working at McDonald's or whatever, and your boss won't give you any time off, school tours really are not going to be an option. So, you know, for another parent, you know, who doesn't have the language skills, who doesn't have the education, who doesn't have a computer at home. And I interviewed for this story as parents who don't have computers at home and don't have computer skills. You're out of luck.
And you have two examples of families, two different families in your mm-hmm. reporting. The first was the story of Carrie and Scott. Is it Tanabe?
Tanabe.
Tanabe, yeah. Which is the more successful model. And then the other family, a mom, she is an undocumented mother who said she'd like to be called Adelina Hernandez. Can you mm-hmm. tell me about her experience?
One thing I've realized since publishing this story is that for many people, Adelina Hernandez, which is a name we made up for her, mm-hmm. is actually my story's villain. She's undocumented. She's lived in the city now for 10 years. She's still struggling to learn English. She was communicating with me through a translator. Unfortunately, I don't speak Spanish myself. And she was very confused by the application process. And she had one son who was already attending an elementary school. She wanted to get her younger son in. The system had changed since she had gotten her older son into the school. So there were just aspects of it that confused her. And I have discovered in responses to my story that a lot of people say she shouldn't be here. She shouldn't be in San Francisco. She should have learned English by now. For them, she's a villain. You know, and Carrie and Scott Tanabe are wonderful people. They are not the villains. And I know that a lot of people who read my story do sort of see them as being the villains. But they're not rich. They're not dot-comers. You know, they both work. They're a two-income family, and they work because they have to, because that's what families do in San Francisco to get by, because it's bloody expensive living here, as we all know. And they want what's best for their kids. They are going to use every advantage that they have to get the best education for their children that they can. And they just happen to have a lot more advantages than somebody like Adelina Hernandez.
And Adelina Hernandez ends up having to, you know, just kind of let her kids go to the neighborhood school.
That's right. She goes
and
to the neighborhood
school. And then that's how the resegregation happens.
Yes, exactly. To me, Adelina poses a challenge to the city of San Francisco, which is, can we feel empathy and compassion for people who have come here, who from other places, oftentimes because they were facing extreme poverty or war, or the equivalent in the form of the drug wars? Can we accept those people, and can we provide them with the opportunity to make a better life for their children? Can we do that? There's the kind of irrational, baseless fear that takes over a lot of parents. You know, we live in a very competitive society. We look at our city, at the homelessness. We also look at how competitive college admissions has become and how expensive, and we worry. We worry about our children. We don't want to, we feel like we don't have any margin of error. And I'm not going to say those fears are baseless. I feel them. Hmm. However, I think that the individual parents really have to look inside and ask themselves, is this fear legitimate? I have this I'm not a racist, but I have this vague, nebulous fear of that majority Latino school in my neighborhood, because it doesn't seem very, and then they can't quite find the words. Like, I see it all the time amongst my fellow white people. They become a little incoherent. And I understand that.
They don't know how to say it right.
Like, they don't know how to say it right.
In an acceptable way.
They don't know how to say it in an acceptable way. You know, one of the insights that I take from my work at the UC Berkeley Greater Good Science Center is that there's no such thing as racist or not racist. It's not like there's a switch in our brains. All people, you know, we have brains that are designed to look for differences, and we have brains that are designed to go on high alert when we encounter something that we're not comfortable with, right? And that's true for all people. That's part of what it means to be a human. These feelings are natural. But what we have to do, the solution to that in a multiracial society, is to be aware of those feelings. And if we're aware of them, then that allows us to break that knee-jerk bias, that implicit bias. And if we start asking, if we develop that awareness, if we start asking ourselves these questions, then I'm willing to bet that a lot of San Francisco public schools will become a lot more attractive. And this isn't something you can tell people to do. It's something you have to ask. And I guess maybe that's what I'm doing now. I'm asking more privileged parents in San Francisco to ask themselves those questions and to consider some alternatives that maybe they hadn't considered before.